So I'm Rick Hansen, and this is December 15th, right? 2010. All right. And tonight I wanted to talk a bit and see what you think about the whole idea of quiet eyes. And let me tell you what I mean by that. That's a phrase you might recognize. It comes apparently from an African American minister, I believe, in Southern California, who wrote a beautiful book about it that a teacher of mine named Kamala Masters read and referred to on a retreat I was on, in which she was talking about equanimity. And the phrase quiet eyes, just for me, is so rich, you know, with feeling and meaning. Quiet eyes. And I think a lot about what it actually means to have quiet eyes, especially at a time, you know, in the holiday season, and maybe all times are intense and turbulent and jaw-dropping, and this is really weird, you know. But America sure feels that way to me these days. You know, so it's really great to have quiet eyes, right? So quiet eyes means, in a lot of ways, equanimity, in the sense that things happen, and we even have reactions to the things that are happening. But we be with those reactions, and we be with those events with a quality that has three components to it. One, we're engaged, we're present with it. Two, we're balanced. It's as if we have, as I've said in here, a deep keel in the water, so that when the winds blow, they don't knock the ship over. And then the third quality is steadiness. And that also is one of the benefits, for example, of training and meditation, to develop the steadiness of mind. Okay. And so I would say that's the essence of equanimity. Now, at this point, I'd like to link quiet eyes, all right? And I think you know the feeling of quiet eyes versus angry eyes or hungry eyes, right? Sounds like country and western lyrics here. Or confused eyes, deluded eyes, clouded eyes, right? Quiet eyes compared to angry eyes, hungry eyes, or clouded eyes. And I'd like to link the idea of hungry eyes to what the Buddha called the third foundation of mindfulness. This year, we've kind of laid out an investigation of mindfulness, the four foundations. I think the fourth foundation, which comprises a lot of the major themes and lists and notions in Buddhism, I think we'll probably segue into that in the first quarter or so of next year. And then next year, by the way, I really want to get into relationships as a field of practice and a support for practice. And it's also a real minefield, you know, right? You know, that's where the action is a lot, right? It's with other people. Okay, so in the four foundations of mindfulness, by foundations, the Buddha really meant, where do we rest attention? What do we pay attention to? What do we investigate? What do we want to be mindful of? The first is the body. The second foundation is the sense, moment to moment, in experience of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. The third foundation is state of mind altogether. I talked a bit about that in the meditation, you know, with regard to two aspects of state of mind. One is desire present, is wanting present or not? And then second, is fear or anger, aversion, in other words, is fear or anger present or not? So in the third foundation, we are to be aware of our state of mind. We don't change it. This is where the teachings about just be mindful, or in a kind of choiceless way of what's there, get really developed. And then there's the fourth foundation, as I said, which has all these major themes to it. So in the third foundation, for example, we are to be aware of whether we have a mind marked by lust, in the traditional phrase, grasping, greed, insistence, you know, gotta have it, right? Distinct from simply liking. Second, we are to notice whether we have a mind that is marked by anger or by hatred, by dislike, by resistance, by aversion, by feeling threatened, feeling worried, feeling irritated, exasperated. For myself, I've had to kind of practice through tonight the fact that, you know, every day I get to the end of my to-do list, and by the time I get to, you know, 2 o'clock the next day, there are 40 new items on it. Right? Does that sound like anyone else's life in the room? And so that would be a mind in which I would observe, and I did observe during the meditation, a mind that had some irritability in it deep down, which I think is mostly not there right now. Third, this is the Buddhist list. In the third foundation of mindfulness, we are to be aware of a state of mind as to whether or not it is deluded or whether or not it sees clearly. Okay. Fourth, we are to be aware of whether our mind is distracted or not distracted. Okay. Those are the four sort of worldly elements, and then there are four more that have a little bit more of an esoteric quality to them. Things like, is the mind composed or not composed? Is it surpassable or unsurpassable? In this sense, surpassable is better than unsurpassable, in the sense that, is there a recognition that we could move on from this current state of mind to an even more sublime state of mind? You know, is this a mind that's concentrated or not concentrated? Concentrated being kind of Buddhist code for settling into very non-ordinary states of awareness, and so forth. But tonight I really want to focus with you on whether the mind altogether is colored by, this is a nice way to think about it, is it shaded by or haunted by, you know, qualities of wanting or not, fear and anger or not, deludedness or not, and distractibility or not. Those are the questions. And the lovely implicit idea is that when you've got a mind that's not colored by, let's say, wanting or aversion or confusion or distractibility, it defaults into a really good place. Okay. So, one of the things that happens when you're just doing the third foundation is something quite radical, because it takes you quickly to quiet eyes. In other words, it moves you to a place where there's a naming to yourself. Oh, irritability. Oh, frustration. Too many tasks. Too little time. Oh, wanting. I want to get all this stuff done. I want those people to be a certain way in my life. I want more money. I need more money. Whatever it is, you know. When we just acknowledge it, we don't try to change it. There's an acceptance there at this practice. This is not the only practice in Buddhism. There's also wise effort, but this is wise mindfulness. We're just being with it. In wise mindfulness. Okay? When we do that, it's interesting, that makes our eyes quiet. It takes us to kind of a quieter place of ease. Oh, anger. Oh, not angry. Oh, really want it. Oh, fine without it. Oh, clouded. Really confused, rattled, spinning. Oh, clear seeing. Oh, distracted. Choo, 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 choo. Ping-ponging. Popcorn brain. Not distracted. But quiet in the whole process. So I have a suggestion, then we can talk about it. In a minute, I suggest that if you're willing, and you can always opt out, any of these things, that you grab a partner and you pick an important person or situation. Okay? Holidays tend to have a lot of those. Pick one, you know. Well, we can't be here all night. Anyway, just pick one and pick an A, pick a B. A's will go first. A's are mainly the talker. B's are mainly the listener. You know how that works. Bees, if you have a question or want a clarification, feel free. Please don't offer advice, and don't take A's airtime by telling a long story about your sister-in-law who's just like that, okay? And then we'll do that for 3 or 4 minutes and then switch and we'll come back. The question is kind of an exploration and reflection. Well, how could I approach this challenging person or situation with quiet eyes, including quiet eyes for my own reactions? In other words, how could I use the third foundation of mindfulness to develop quieter eyes? That's the real question. In other words, how could I use a kind of accepting acknowledgement of my own state of mind, moment to moment, as a way to help me get to a quieter, calmer, more equanimous place with this important person or situation? Is that clear? And then we'll come back and talk about it. Okay, so grab a partner, if you could please. And don't dive into it yet. Feel free to spread out, otherwise it'll get a little cacophonous in here. Please talk softly if you can, otherwise it'll get really loud. It's okay to move up to the front. If you have bare feet or socks on the wood floor, watch out for splinters. It's okay to move your chairs. It's okay to move chairs. All right, get that A and a B. Okay, A's, you go first. How could you develop quieter eyes, quote unquote, for this important person or situation? Please begin. Okay. Come on back. Okay. Quiet those mouths. All right. Okay, what'd you see? What will help you have quieter eyes? What is it to have quiet eyes? Please. Okay. Yeah, be with it rather than responding.
Uh-huh.
Or take more time to find out.
Uh-huh. And just watching
it. Yeah, give yourself the gift of time.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Good, thanks. How about other people? What helps you have quieter eyes? Yeah.
Anger being something that I have trouble allowing myself to feel. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Great. Yeah, right there.
Yeah, I've noticed that when I'm reactive, it's usually a sign that there's some imbalance going on within myself.
Yeah.
So that's the first place. Not that there isn't something happening out, in the world, but my response.
Yeah, that's really true for me. What helps me get to that place is being more collected and centered and having my own fundamental needs taken care of. Right? It's when my major needs are taken care of, it's a lot easier to be quieter in the mind about the minor frustrations or fears. Great, yeah, Jeff.
For me, I found many times if I ever so subtly just continue to follow the breath with like 5% or even 1% of my attention, it keeps me anchored in the present.
Wonderful.
And then I'm much more attentive to what's going on.
Yeah. That's great, yeah.
I'm aware that there is nothing in my brain that ramps up my attention like being angry or critical. I feel a lot of fear, but mostly angry and criticalness. And so in our discussion, it became clear to me that a lot of little children could use the ramp of attention that don't include in anger and being critical. And like Jeff said, just the breath, but just keeping it quiet. I mean, from the moment that the beginning of meditation, you invited to pay attention. I continue to do that while walking in the back and going outside, just keeping it quiet in the background. And I was amazed at this crazy coming in and going out. But that was enough to actually ramp up my attention for everything else. For comments, for discussions, it's just trying to sit in the background.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Thank you. Sure. Right there.
Sometimes if there's someone that kind of remember that they suffer a lot too. And there's some little hiding that. It's sometimes like a fear.
Right. Yeah. One thing that really helps me too is to see a person or a situation as just due to so many causes. You know, like you look over, like this person is maybe doing something that's aggravating to you at least, or it's not happening over there or something, you know. And to just go, wow. And appreciate the vast swarm of causes that have huge momentum that are manifesting right then and right there through that situation or as that situation. That's a lot about equanimity, is seeing the vastness of the causal streams in any situation or in any person, including in your own reaction. It's a trip to look at your own, what Jung called complexes. I think of them as psychic gristle. You know, these kind of gristly things, like, you know, kind of chew and swallow, you know, in the mind, right? And they're connected to all kinds of other things. And just think of everything that went into making up those gristle in your own mind, you know, those complexes in your own mind. Your mom, your dad, your relatives, your gender, your culture, the time you were born, whole nine yards, your fourth grade teacher, whatever, right? It's a lot. It gives you a sense of like, wow, somehow you can see it then with a quieter way. You see it really, it's like watching an eddy in a river. Just don't imagine all the things that led to that particular standing wave. Wow. It can help quiet your eyes. Yeah.
In terms of when I catch myself, I'm starting to ramp up. There's a phrase that I've heard Ajahn Chah use one time, which is, if it shouldn't be, it wouldn't be. Simply, which, you know, brings on the thought of equanimity. That it is what it is because it's the way it should be. If it wasn't supposed to happen, it wouldn't.
Right, the tricky thing, of course, is the ways that there are kind of two meanings to supposed to or should, you know. One adds a moral valence to it. And then that tips into beliefs that sometimes people have about that it's some kind of divine plan or based on karma from previous lives. And it could be true that maybe it's not true, but that's distinct from it, as you well know, I'm just saying kind of for general purposes, the sense that, you know, of determinism, really, that all kinds of factors determine this moment, and if it could have been determined otherwise, it would have been. But that's, in that way of looking at it, it still leaves plenty of room to look back and go, well, part of what determined it being this way is I or maybe other people made certain kinds of choices that in retrospect could have been more skillful. Blah, blah. So, you know, there's, just want to call that out. Okay, great. Last one, and then we'll move to an end.
When I'm looking up, when my eyes get wild, rather than soft and quiet, I'm generally hooked into my own story about how I think things should be. And anytime there's a should involved, it's a huge negative which leads down the wrong path.
Yeah.
So what I'm aware of is if I drop the story and any expectations of how I think people ought to be reacting, especially around the holidays, there's a lot of expectation that things should be done in a certain way, and often with a fairly dysfunctional family, it's always the opposite. And yet there's occasion there, and there's a getting together, and things are happening. And if I drop all the story, then everything is much softer and easier and more, and for me, much more calm and peaceful. And it ain't the picture that I might have wanted it to be. You know, it's like letting go of that other movie. So I think it's helpful if I remember. And usually that story comes from some little girl place in me that I want it to be this, you know, Christmas card picture story that I'm turning on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Just to finish on that point, you know, from myself on that, it's when it's quieter over here, when there's less of a story, when there's less noise over here, fewer movies running, it's a lot easier to be quiet, have quiet eyes. You know. Well. This coming week, so I'll see you hopefully next Wednesday, and this coming week, I really encourage you to play around with this third foundation of mindfulness, where from just time to time in your meditation, or and in daily life, even more importantly, from time to time, just kind of check in with yourself and ask overall, what's my state of mind like? And in particular, these four things, is it colored or not colored by strong wanting, or strong anger / fear, or any anger / fear, or a kind of confused, quality, or by distractibility. All right? Okay, good. And then,